Welcome to the weekend and this edition of the Florida Roundtable. My name's Bill Mick. You'll find me and podcast of our show at BillMick.com. Podcast there at the top of the page. It's been busy in Washington, D.C. since the inauguration of President Trump. However, that's not the only capital where things have been moving rather quickly. Tallahassee has been busy as well. Three special sessions, and now the run-up to the March regular session is in play. To spell it all out for us this week, Representative Tyler Saroy joins us. He is the House Majority Leader in the Florida Legislature. We'll talk the special sessions. Is it reconciliation for Republicans? What does the new immigration bill do, and where do we go from here? That's ahead this weekend on the Florida Roundtable here on the Florida News Network. Glad to have you along. We're back in moments.
Feeling the aches and pains of everyday life slowing you down? Introducing Blue Emu, America's number one emu oil formula for pain relief. In a recent clinical trial, 91% of users saw improvement after using Blue Emu. Whether you're working hard, playing harder, or just staying active, Blue Emu penetrates deep to relieve joint and muscle pain fast. And best of all, you won't stink. Join the 91% who felt the difference. Find Blue Emu at your local retailer or online. Blue Emu works fast and you won't stink.
Big parties mean making tough last-minute decisions, but planning the perfect meal shouldn't be one of them. So let the Fresh from Florida Club help. Members can browse hundreds of recipes, from sweet corn with barbecue butter to Florida's spiny lobster bisque, each with local, in-season ingredients to create and save menus ahead of time so you can sit back and enjoy the party. Visit FreshFromFlorida.com and join the free Fresh from Florida Club. It could be the easiest decision you'll make all year.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-410-6385. 800-410-6385. 800-410-6385. That's 800-410-6385.
I'm a father.
I'm an aunt. I'm a neighbor.
I'm a veteran.
But out here, on the water,
I'm operating the boat.
A boat operator.
I'm a safe operator.
The operator.
If you're behind the wheel of a boat, you only have one job. Keep everyone safe. Always scan the water and be aware of your surroundings. Learn more about boating safety at myfwc.com. Brought to you by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Nice to have you with us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable from the Florida News Network. Of course, I'm Bill Mick. Joining us this week is Representative Tyler Saroy, who is the House Majority Leader. And Tyler, thanks for taking the time again. Not been that long since we visited, but man, Tallahassee's been a little busy this year.
Yeah, good to be with you, and thank you again for having me.
Sure.
It is busy. We are in the last committee week before the start of the regular session on March 4th. So right now, subcommittees are meeting, they're hearing bills, appropriations requests for consideration in the state budget were due last Friday, and we're now working on those toward developing a state budget. So we are full speed ahead.
Well, and as busy as you guys have been, it's been busier than most years because you've had three special sessions prior to your regular session starting, all of them focused primarily around this immigration bill that was finally landed on in the last special session. Tell us about those three sessions and your impression of them as they played out.
Well, you know, it all started really with a disagreement over what was the appropriate action for the state to take and when was it appropriate for us to step in. You know, part of the disagreement stems from Governor DeSantis calling us into special session to take up immigration policies that we had not yet received direction from Washington, from the Trump administration on what they wanted us to pursue. Mm-hmm. So it was our position in the House, and the Senate shared it, is that we wanted to see the executive orders issued by the president on day one of his presidency related to immigration, and then we would be prepared to respond in a way that met the directives coming from the president. So he issued that order. It was called Stopping the Illegal Invasion of the United States, and he was able to outline specific actions where the state could come in and support the detention and deportation of illegal aliens. And we were able to produce a bill that accomplished what the president was asking for.
Interesting. And there were some compromises along the way. The first special session, the House and Senate adjourned nearly immediately and then convened their own to bring in your own issues into play. Governor wasn't happy with that. He said he would veto that bill, and that brought you back into a third special session. But in between all of that, a lot of sniping going on between the leadership in the House and the Senate and the governor, which was A, really unbecoming, B, not really consistent with what we've seen in that relationship over the first 6 years of the governor's administration. And do you feel like a real compromise was reached here, a real compromise was reached, and that there is agreement on where we're going here?
I do believe, you know, that it was a good compromise. It certainly was collaborative between the House and the Senate and the governor's office. And I think that you saw a product that allows us to address the crisis of illegal immigration in a very serious way. You know, we end in-state tuition for the children of illegal immigrants, for example. Mm-hmm. We empower law enforcement with additional training and resources to go out and to capture illegal aliens. We create more beds to hold them so they're not being released back into society.
So money for those additional beds was made it into the final bill?
Yes, it did. Okay. Yes, it did. And that's a critical piece of the legislation because, you know, one of the accusations that was kind of thrown out there that this was catch and release, this bill is far from it. This bill is about detaining these folks until they can be turned over to the federal government for deportation. Under the Biden administration, you saw these folks being released because the feds were refusing to deport them. So I think in terms of what the other states have done, Florida has produced the most aggressive and really historic legislation in terms of deportation and securing the southern border. The other thing that I would add is I think that the governor, frankly, was unaccustomed to a legislature that was going to push back with a vision of our own and policy ideas of our own.
He'd not seen it in 6 years.
No. And part of what we did in that special session was create special select committees to give members of this body an opportunity to submit their ideas of what that legislation should look like.
We'll talk about that legislation, and then we're going to take a look at what's coming up in the regular session of the legislature with House Majority Leader Tyler Serroy here on the Roundtable.
Looking to connect with your community? Florida's Transit connects you to the heart of it all. Florida's bus and rail systems bring people together. Whether you're heading to a local farmers market, a neighborhood festival, or a community event, Transit helps you stay connected to everything happening around you. When you ride Transit, you're not just getting from point A to point B. You're building connections with your neighbors, your friends, and your city. Florida's Transit system is part of your community, helping you stay in touch with all that's important. Florida's Transit system is designed to keep you connected. Visit transitconnectsflorida.com for more details and schedules.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-648-9174. 800-648-9174. That's 800-648-9174.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision, especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibello for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
Back with Florida House Majority Leader Tyler Serroy with us on the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick. Thank you for spending your time with us here this weekend as we talk about the special session where the immigration bill compromise was finally reached. Tyler, you mentioned some of the things that that bill accomplished, and there's one that is concerning to me, and that's creating a state board of immigration enforcement. It's comprised of executive members of the governor,
the cabinet.
Yeah, the cabinet serving as that board. Is that a necessary board, and why did the legislature think so?
Well, and that's a result of a compromise, because one of the objections that the governor had was the first iteration of the bill where we empowered the Commissioner of Agriculture to be Florida's chief immigration officer. And while I stand by the reasoning behind that decision, you know, boots on the ground, existing infrastructure, existing enforcement capability with a footprint that is around the state, the compromise solution that we were able to reach was empowering the entire cabinet of Florida to be, in essence, the chief immigration office. They've appointed an executive director of that program. And really, it's necessary to make sure that local law enforcement funds that are being expended on immigration enforcement are being reimbursed, that we are meeting the reporting requirements laid out by the federal government, and that we're able to very quickly address and streamline the deportation of unlawful migrants. So I think that structurally, you know, for the administration of our bill, that really makes sense.
You mentioned an executive director of that program. Is that a new employee, or is that someone picking up additional duties from a job they already have?
I believe it's someone that's picking up additional duties. We already have kind of in the governor's office a public safety's czar. It makes sense to me that these duties would fall under that office. You know, the other enforcement piece here that makes sense from a public safety lens is what the bill does to target gang members and cartel members, and also making sure that we're properly enforcing some of the protections that we've put in place for our elections to make sure that unlawful migrants are not voting in our elections or attempting to do so. And we also actually created a new crime. It is now a criminal act to enter Florida as an unlawful undocumented migrant. So these are all things where we want to have enforcement, and we want to have the cabinet in a position to be able to assess and evaluate what's going on.
In essence, giving Florida a tool, should the administration in Washington, D.C. change, and we know that they do over time, that it would still be illegal to be in Florida illegally, whether the feds were going to do anything about it or not.
That's exactly right. And you know, that's reflected in another piece of this bill where we provide an automatic death sentence to undocumented unlawful migrants that are in Florida that commit capital offenses, which are the most heinous crimes imaginable against our seniors and our children. You know, if you're here in Florida and you're engaging in those most violent criminal acts, we're going to put you to death. You know, our aim here is to have zero tolerance for this kind of behavior. And I think
is it the legislature's belief that's going to be a deterrent to people coming here?
Absolutely. I think absolutely it's going to be a deterrent, you know, the same way that it is to remove in-state tuition. You know, what we have to do is take the benefits off the table as a deterrent for folks that are, you know, violating that southern border, coming here illegally and want to make Florida their destination. We're simply going to remove all of the incentives that are attached to that.
Well, let me take you back to the Board of Immigration Enforcement. It seems odd to me that a Republican-controlled legislature with a veto-proof majority would deem it reasonable to create another level of bureaucracy when just assigning this, as you noted, to the governor's law enforcement arm of his office, whether it's FDLE, Florida Highway Patrol, or whoever that may be, these folks are used to dealing with the federal authorities on other investigations. It seems like an unnecessary level of bureaucracy to me.
You know, and I'm aware of that concern. And that was one of my concerns with the governor's initial proposals, is you started talking about citizen oversight committees of sheriff's departments and mandates that 10% of law enforcement and an agency be dedicated to immigration enforcement. I mean, that was top down, you know, micromanagement.
Absolutely.
Of our law enforcement.
Yeah.
So the bill that we reach, the compromise that we have, you know, replaces that initial proposal of a single immigration enforcement officer and empowers Florida's cabinet and the collective resources that they all share, you know, to be able to bring to the table to create this express lane to deliver unlawful aliens to the federal government. And I think in light of the alternatives, you know, empowering the cabinet to act in this fashion makes the most sense.
One thing to note is they must act in unison. They must be unanimous for any decisions they make coming out of there. Can you tell me the kind of things they may be faced with deciding?
You know, I really think that the main work that they're going to have is the reimbursement function of the state grants that we've created to reimburse local law enforcement for expenses that they incur in terms of the enforcement action and delivering these folks to federal custody. You know, that is going to be the main focus of their role. We also have created an advisory committee of four police chiefs and four sheriffs to advise the cabinet, to advise the legislature on best practices, you know, reporting any follow-up statistics that are needed on operations that the federal government should be aware of, you know, so really making sure that we have all of the players at the table in terms of creating this express lane for the deportation of unlawful migrants.
Who makes up that committee, that advisory committee?
So the advisory committee is appointees of the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, and the Governor. And that advisory council is made up of four police chiefs and four sheriffs.
Okay, so it is law enforcement folks who have been engaged, are on the job, and no one understand it.
Right. Yeah. These are not you know, political appointees. These are boots on the ground law enforcement from across the state.
All right. Let me take you back to the relationship between the legislature and the governor. For a couple of weeks there, it was very acrimonious, and there was in the media name calling, belittling each other's work, and that type of thing. And all of a sudden, we had in the media during this third special session, it appeared to be kumbaya, everything is wonderful. And I for one, as a regular observer of this, don't believe it. Tell me the relationships as they exist now.
Well, you know, I think that you had for many years a legislature that was largely compliant in what the governor wanted us to pursue in terms of policy. And really what changed, you know, were new presiding officers coming in, you know, new leadership teams in both the House and the Senate that had a different perspective on how the legislature and the executive are supposed to collaborate and communicate with one another. And frankly, you know, we felt very strongly that deportation of unlawful migrants is a federal responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, the reason that we're in the mess that we are today is because the federal government has refused to secure the southern border. Finally, we had a president come in that said, we're going to do something about this. So we felt very strongly as a House of Representatives that we wanted to wait and see what President Trump wanted to do in terms of federal action. The governor had his own set of ideas and called the special session. You know, there was very little consultation with the presiding officers. It was unclear what policies we were going to be pursuing because the president hadn't issued his executive orders yet. And that's really where our disagreement started. But like any relationship, Bill, you know, any relationship is built on trust and communication. And I think in this case, you know, while I have tremendous respect for Governor DeSantis and certainly want him to be successful, you know, there was a prevailing opinion in the legislature that the communication was not there. And communication is very much a two-way street.
Sure.
So you saw the disagreement happen with the way the special session was called. You saw the opinion that we share as legislators. Let's see what the federal commitment is going to be before we act. And yeah, it was a difficult couple of weeks. But I do think as we begin communicating more with the governor's office, you saw kind of a de-escalation of the tension. And what resulted from that was a very good public policy as an outcome. And the other thing that I would add, Bill, for your listeners is, you know, it may seem unusual or it may seem unseemly, But the system is designed to work this way. You know, the three branches of government are designed to work this way. Mm-hmm. We have some give and take with the executive. You know, he has an opportunity to give his input. He certainly has a veto power. Ultimately, whatever we pass is going to go to the courts for them to have their say. But people should not be discouraged in the slightest. What you've seen here in Tallahassee, I think, is government functioning at its best.
Maybe the politics a little bit at their worst. These discussions do need to go on, and I understand that. Generally, they'll go on behind closed doors. There was politics behind this on one or both sides.
You know, everybody in elected office kind of has their methodology in terms of how they approach the job. You know, for my part, I try very hard to make sure that everyone is communicating, that the members of our caucus are doing their part to keep our temperature low, and that we're doing our level best to put forward policies that are going to move the ball down the field. And I think ultimately what you see is a bill, legislation that is now law, that achieves the objective of getting unlawful migrants out of Florida.
Do you think this has established a reset in the relationship between the governor and the legislature, and that it's on solid footing, positive footing, as it moves forward now?
Definitely a reset. Definitely a reset in terms of the nature of our relationship. And, you know, I do believe that the presiding officers and the governor now are speaking regularly, which is a good thing, you know, particularly as we move into the regular session. You know, in terms of the footing that the relationship is on, you know, I think that time will tell. As I said earlier, relationships are built on trust and communication, and that is not something that happens overnight. You know, but again, you know, I want the governor to be successful. I want Florida to be successful. And I think when we are collaborating, although we may disagree, and that happens, you know, collaboration is going to produce the best outcome. And I think you have that in our immigration enforcement legislation.
Just a very general question with about 30 seconds left, Tyler. Do you feel that the governor and the legislature are on the same page or pages as we move into this regular legislative session?
I do. I do think we're on the same page. You know, the top item that we're all discussing and turning our attention to is affordability for Floridians, and certainly look forward to talking more about homeowners insurance and property taxes moving forward.
And we're going to get there as we continue this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. Nice to have you with us on the Florida News Network with Representative and State House Majority Leader Tyler Saroy. Back in moments.
Big parties mean making tough last-minute decisions, but planning the perfect meal shouldn't be one of them. So let the Fresh from Florida Club help. Members can browse hundreds of recipes, from sweet corn with barbecue butter to Florida's spiny lobster bisque, each with local, in-season ingredients to create and save menus ahead of time so you can sit back and enjoy the party. Visit FreshFromFlorida.com and join the free Fresh from Florida Club. It could be the easiest decision you'll make all year.
Florida law requires you to remain at the scene of a crash and to call for help. Leaving the scene is a felony offense that includes losing your license and possible jail time. After a crash, stay at the scene, call for assistance, and wait for first responders to arrive. If you have information on a hit-and-run crash, report it by calling Star FHP or anonymously to Crime Stoppers at *8477. A message from the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Crump witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org, where we have posted a link to the fabulous work known as the Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late. We stay informed. We invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion, or your race, or because you have children, or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Back on the Florida Roundtable, Bill Mick with Representative Tyler Saroy, the House Majority Leader in Tallahassee. Tyler, again, thank you for taking the time. It's good to have you along this weekend. You've got now just a week or so before the regular session starts. A lot of business behind you with the special sessions that we talked about earlier. What are you looking at as you go into March and the weeks following for this legislature coming up?
Well, I'm looking for you know, an issue that everybody's talking about at their kitchen counter. Insurance rates are not coming down fast enough. You know, I hear from my constituents about it regularly. And I think if we are not able to bring rates down fast enough, we need to have a serious conversation about property taxes. You know, the reality is that property owners in the state of Florida are the ones that shoulder the lion's share of the tax burden. And when you join that with the property insurance crisis, you know, that is making life unaffordable for Floridians. So what I would like to do is look at ways, you know, we can potentially bring down the tax burden, whether it's increasing, you know, homestead exemptions or, you know, there's a variety of different options, but that's something that we need to be taking a serious look at.
Well, there's just a bill proposed this past week, and I understand there's a companion bill in the House and the Senate to at least have the legislature's research staff look at eliminating property taxes in the state or how best to reduce them. What do you think about that idea, and does it have a chance of flying?
I do think it has a chance. I mean, there's no doubt that we need to do something about this. It is out of control. Everyone who owns property, you know, that has a mortgage is familiar with these insurance rates, and you dread getting a letter from your carrier in the mail. You know, it's a fine line between doing, you know, taking action to reduce insurance rates, but without, you know, over the top government intervention in the private marketplace. What I don't want to happen is see the state, you know, get involved in the market to the extent where you end up with something like Obamacare, you know, wholesale government takeover of a private market. We need to be very careful in observing those boundaries. And I think that property taxes is something that we can step in and take a serious look at.
Well, local government's concerned when they hear that because they are very largely funded through those property taxes, whether it's schools, whether it's our county commissions or our city governments that are in play. Melbourne's mayor spoke out very strongly against the idea in the article that I read about it. What would be the alternative for these other government entities, city, county, whatever it may be, to be able to fund their operations, because property taxes are a significant portion of that?
They are a significant portion of that. And you know, throughout the research process and the bill presentation here in Tallahassee, I think that those are questions that we need to further explore.
Has anyone, as they've looked at this, laid out any potential solutions yet, or is it just too early to tell?
It's too early to tell. You know, one of the things that we're able to do with a study is really consult the experts, you know, look at some case studies, understand what the impacts of potential elimination or further reduction of property taxes are going to look like, you know, and then we can make a well-informed decision moving forward. You know, this year we may consider some increases to existing exemptions, but I think a wholesale replacement of the current property tax structure is probably going to take a little bit more time and research.
I would agree with you there. And it seems like the only viable alternative would be an increase in sales tax, either at the state level or given the counties and cities options to do that as well. And what types of controls might needed to be placed on that in order for those not to become exorbitant and detrimental as opposed to a positive there.
Right. You don't want the taxes to become prohibitive to small business either. So, you know, those are all things that we need to take a look at. You know, the issue with a sales tax, I think, is it is fair and across the board.
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody pays it, as opposed to renters, for example, who don't pay any property taxes. Now, it certainly may be reflected in their rental rate, you know, but the point is, a lot of Floridians are on fixed incomes, and our current property taxes coupled with the homeowners insurance rates, you know, are making life really unaffordable for a lot of people. And I think we need to start being more creative in terms of how we address that.
Oh, there's no doubt. What other priorities are you looking at as a leader in the House of Representatives, the priorities that you're going to have moving into this regular session?
You know, these are my priorities are issues that you and I have been talking about now for a number of years on Bill Mick Live. File a bill today to move the age back to 18 to buy a long gun, you know, correcting some of these Second Amendment infringements that we've seen the legislature conduct over these many years, certainly a result of the Parkland bill, which was passed before I got elected to the House. You know, moving the age back to 18 to buy a long gun, in my view, is really correcting an inequity that exists presently in Florida law. You know, ending a loophole where you could gift a long gun to a family member, but the single mom that lives on the rough part of town, you know, is not able to buy a long gun to protect herself and her family if she's under the age of 21. So that's something that we're looking at. I think it's an important issue to solve. You know, we've talked about risk protection orders, red flag laws before. I'd like to see those repealed. So, you know, continuing the Second Amendment bills is something I'm particularly interested in.
And while that's going to have a welcome environment in the Florida House, have you had any discussion with membership in the Senate that would indicate, because the Senate president has indicated he's not interested in dealing with Second Amendment issues at all, is there any indication they'll take it up, even if you get it through with flying colors in the Florida House?
You know, I mean, that ultimately is going to rest with them. Hope springs eternal. You know, I'm optimistic that Senate leadership will have a change of heart and understand how important these Second Amendment issues are. The long gun bill, moving the age back to 18 to buy a long gun, we passed out of the House of Representatives by a party line vote last year. I expect that we will do so again this year. Whether or not the Senate chooses to take it up remains to be seen. But I certainly hope that they will.
With hope springing eternal, I want to talk to your daughter about a pony and Christmas.
That's right.
And I appreciate the Second Amendment push. I really do. And there are corrections that need to be made. Again, Stoneman Douglas was a hastily crafted piece of legislation that was very poorly done under the legislature that existed at that time and signed by Governor Rick Scott because the legislature felt they had to do something. that was why I was a little worried about the three special sessions here, thinking we'd be better off pushing that immigration bill into the regular session. Do you feel like you had the contemplation time you needed to get a good bill here?
I do. And it really underscores your point. I think that the way we approach the immigration debate, you know, we didn't jam through a bill that we were all unfamiliar with. We did it over a couple of weeks. It was very much a give and take process with the governor's office. We created special committees where, you know, I think 2/3 of the membership of the House of Representatives had the opportunity to sit on these committees and hear this legislation. We debated it and took amendments over a course of hours on the floor. That is a stark difference from other special sessions where, frankly, members drive to Tallahassee, they punch a button, vote, and turn around and go home all in a day. You know, this process unfolded over a couple of weeks. As messy as it may have seemed to outside observers, I think the process worked as it is intended.
You were instrumental in a bill that went through last year regarding technology and children. And artificial intelligence has become, it's like it's exploded even in the last year or so, and it seems to be growing at a great rate. Are you in the legislature taking a look at those things? You can't be ahead of tech issues, but are you able to keep up at all?
You know, I think that we're able to keep up, and I think if we narrow our purpose, you know, we can have some good outcomes. You know, one of the things that I'm focused on is how technology, social media in particular, is affecting the behavioral and emotional development and intellectual development of our children. You know, these software platforms are intentionally being designed to manipulate the kids, the way that our kids behave and the way that they think. I believe that that is wrong. I believe that that's a parent's job, not some computer programmer sitting out in California, certainly not leaving it up to some algorithm to decide what is and what is not free speech. So one of the things that we're taking a look at is kind of continuing this discussion of age verification, which we took up last session, making sure that applications and these different technology platforms are not being deployed in ways that are exploitive of our children. And that's something that I've worked on for a number of years now. We'll continue to do so. But you're right to point it out. It's a very urgent conversation that we as policymakers need to have.
Are you aware of the legislature or maybe some of your bill writing staff using AI to compile things for you guys? I think it'd be a very valuable time-saving tool.
Absolutely. There are things that AI no doubt can be very, very helpful with. You know, there's a lot of technology out there right now that helps identify, you know, school shooters, for example. It can detect gunshots. It can detect, you know, various behaviors that would be threatening to a mass incident of violence at our schools. You know, there are ways to deploy this technology that I think is for the betterment of all of us. Where I come into some concern is when that technology becomes exploitive of kids. And you've seen that with things like TikTok and Facebook, you know, where they are intentionally deploying features that are there to addict and to keep these kids on their platforms. And I think that's wrong.
Representative Tyler Saroy is with us, and we will continue in just moments here on the Florida Roundtable.
Looking to spend more time with the people that matter most? Transit connects you to family. Whether it's taking the kids to school, visiting grandma, or planning a weekend outing, Florida's bus and rail systems connect you to your loved ones without the hassle of traffic or parking. It's affordable, convenient, and the easy way to get together. Hop on and let us take you where you need to go. Because when you ride Transit, you're connecting to what matters most. Florida's transit system makes it easy to connect with family. Visit transitconnectsflorida.com to find your ride.
If your king or queen sago palms have been invaded by Asian cycad scale, it's time to fight back with organic Summit year-round spray oil. It kills Asian cycad, scale, and other insect pests. But Summit year-round spray oil contains no chemical toxins. Insects don't build up a resistance to this horticultural oil, so it keeps working every time you spray. Summit year-round spray oil is available at fine garden centers and at SummitResponsibleSolutions.com.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
Call 800-989-1647. 800-989-1647. That's 800-989-1647.
When was the last time you had a truly awesome nursery experience? A nursery and garden center with a huge selection and friendly expert advice. We're talking about Quality Green Specialists in DeLand. At Quality Green, we have your favorite plants, fruit trees, flowers, vegetables, and herbs. Plus, with our 8011 fertilizer, organic azomite, and composted soil, your garden will look its very best. Great plants, sustainable products, friendly expert advice. 335 West Michigan Avenue, DeLand, and online at qualitygreenspecialist.com.
Back with Florida House Majority Leader Tyler Saroy on the Florida Roundtable. Tyler, a lot of things to cover and little time to do it. Education's always a prime focus in the legislature. What do you know of that's on tap as we move into this regular session for education?
You know, we want to continue our push to give parents maximum rights and flexibility to be involved in the education of their children. You know, giving them maximum flexibility with the dollars that are available to seek an education that best meets the needs of their children. So last session, you know, you saw us continue our efforts to provide, you know, historic school choice throughout Florida, educational choice, letting parents use those tax dollars. The tax dollars funding students rather than funding systems. And I think you're going to see us pursue a continuation of that kind of flexibility.
So those tax dollars now following a kid wherever they go to school pretty much.
They do. So, you know, we spend about roughly about $7,000 per student. That number fluctuates. But what we've done is we've given parents now the opportunity to use those dollars if they want to send their children to a private school, if they want to send, you know, provide them homeschool curriculum. Those dollars now can be used to fund a tuition or to purchase homeschool curriculum resources. Enrichment activities like visiting the science center, you know, what music lessons, language arts, all of these things that parents want to do to enrich their children's education or to make choices that are best for their child's education. We give them a flexibility to do that. And I think that you've seen throughout the state parents take advantage of that, and it's working really well for kids.
As we look at these things, traditionally, at least as I've understood the numbers across the country, that this school choice decision isn't often made, isn't made as often as you might think. Is there anything happening that enhances the public education side of this? Does alleviating the burden of so many kids, or are there enhancements to the public education side that these schools are getting better?
Well, we continue to fund public education at record levels. And I think if it's introduced anything from my lens, it's competition. You know, our public schools are, you know, now incentivized to be able to offer more opportunities, more resources, you know, to be able to compete with other private schools, other educational opportunities for kids. You know, I think whenever you have competition in a marketplace, you know, ultimately the consumer is going to get the best deal and the best outcome. And I think in this instance, our kids, you know, having a full range of options now, parents having a full range of options for how they want their children to receive an education is going to produce good outcomes in the end.
All right. Very good. As you look ahead, and we'll have to continue this in our next segment, but what are you looking at budgetarily for the state? I know the governor submitted a budget to the legislature. It is your job in the legislature to craft it. What kind of priorities are you laying out there?
Yeah, I think that showing restraint in our budgeting is really important, especially as we look at the state's fiscal outlook. We want to make sure we're making responsible decisions. You know, it's a bit nuanced, but I think it's important to note, you know, traditionally in the legislature, we've referred to an appropriations committee. This year, the speaker and the House leadership changed the name of that to the budget committee. And I think there's an important distinction to be made there, because appropriation sounds like we're giving out cash.
Yeah.
But a budget committee implies that choices are being made. And sometimes they're tough choices. But when you budget, you're making responsible decisions with taxpayer money. So I think that's the mindset that we're approaching our fiscal process this year of writing a state budget. In terms of my own priorities for the budget, I think it's important that we continue to invest in vocational and technical training at the local level, making sure that our public high schools, our public schools are continuing to offer programs like welding, plumbing, electrical work, construction. You know, we've had huge success with the firefighting program down in Palm Bay, where a student graduates high school at the age of 18. They can go to work as a firefighter and enter the workforce. That's a good thing.
Glad to see those moving in that direction. We're back to wrap up the Florida Roundtable with Representative Tyler Saroy in moments on the Florida News Network.
Florida law requires you to remain at the scene of a crash and to call for help. Leaving the scene is a felony offense that includes losing your license and possible jail time. After a crash, stay at the scene, call for assistance, and wait for first responders to arrive. If you have information on a hit-and-run crash, report it by calling STAR-FHP or anonymously to Crime Stoppers at STAR-STAR-8477. A message from the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
There's a price war in the insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call the Term Lifeline right now and see if you can save 40%. $500,000 plans and up, that's our specialty. Even great smokers rates. Protect your family today. Call the Term Lifeline right now for a free quote. 866-558-TERM, 866-558-TERM, 866-558-TERM.
Boating restricted zones are an important part of ensuring safety on Florida's waterways. In idle speed, no wake zones, vessels must operate at a minimum speed that will maintain headway and steerage with no visible wake. In slow speed, minimum wake zones, vessels must operate fully off plane and a speed which is making little or no wake. In either zone, vessels should be completely settled in the water, regardless of speed. For more information on this and other safe boating topics, visit myfwc.com.
Fresh Florida greens. These leafy legends turn any dish into a feast of freshness. Wafer thin, they provide layers of vitamins and minerals and fiber. From salads to smoothies, they're the green machine that keeps us on the go, with a versatility that makes other vegetables green with envy. Spinach, kale, romaine, these crispy superheroes never wilt under pressure, unless the recipe calls for it. To see what Florida leafy greens can do for you, visit freshfromflorida.com.
Shortness of breath, patient's confused, temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready, let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrule.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Wrapping up this weekend on the Florida Roundtable, Representative Tyler Saroy has been with us through the hour. If you missed any of it, you can always catch the podcast top of the page there at BillMick.com. And appreciate you. You can throw us your ideas or questions for the shows there as well. Tyler, as we wrap it up, we're never going to get through everything you guys have to deal with. But let's talk about any environmental issues that will be ahead in this legislative session.
You know, one of the things that we're studying right now are line item vetoes of environmental projects from the last legislative session. you know, what we did in the previous session is that we created a new program, a grant program, where we used dollars from the Indian Gaming Compact, revenue from the tribe and the Gaming Compact, to be able to fund environmental projects around the state of Florida. However, when that funding program was put into place, the governor vetoed a lot of water projects around Florida that were unfortunately unable to get into that grant program in time. So one of the things that we're studying are the projects that were caught up in that, where we need to restore the funding, particularly as it relates to projects that need to be closed out. You know, there are septic to sewer projects, septic to sewer conversions, muck dredging projects, other water projects around the state of Florida, where we need to fund them and close them out and take them off the table. So those are one of the things that we're studying through work groups at this session to see if reinstatement is needed.
Does it look like we've got some programs that are perpetual that don't need to be that way? Am I hearing that right?
Absolutely. You know, okay. There are programs, you know, there are programs that are in two or three phases. To me, it makes sense if you've got a program in phase two or phase three that is close to being completed, let's go ahead and get that finished and take it off the table. You know, so that is something now that the natural resources staff, the budget staff is sorting through, and, you know, we may have some movement on that in the coming weeks.
Just a little bit of time left. Healthcare has always been a big portion of the state budget. Medicaid, I guess, still is that. What are we looking at on that front?
You know, I think as far as healthcare goes, we're looking at scope of practice issues. You know, a few years ago, we passed some reforms to allow our pharmacists to test and treat for strep throat. You know, that's a fairly easy test to give, especially post-COVID. You know, we're all familiar with nasal swabs now. Are there ways that we can increase the scope of practice to allow our pharmacists, to allow nurse practitioners to engage in other areas of medicine where patients, consumers, you know, may not want to wait 2 or 3 weeks to see their doctor when they could go in and see their pharmacist or nurse practitioner? Ultimately, we need to create more flexibility, more parental choice to give people greater access to care.
Temperature in the legislature seemed to be amenable to that?
You know, it certainly is in the House of Representatives. I think that we're constantly looking for creative ways to create greater access for patients without them having to wait, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to see their general practitioner. You know, if you don't want to go see a pharmacist for the flu test, you can certainly try to get an appointment with your GP or get into an urgent care. The most costly option, of course, is to go to the emergency room. We want to try to avoid that.
Sure.
To reduce expenses. So, you know, whatever we can do to create more patient choice, I think all of those options are on the table.
Very good. Just to take us back to where we started as we close the show, Tyler, do we look for any of these issues to be fought out in the media, or are they now going to be in the halls of Tallahassee where these are discussed?
You know, it could be both. I mean, look, you know, moving forward, we all have a part to play in this collaborative legislative process that we have.
And we'll talk again. Representative Tyler Saroy, thank you for joining us on the roundtable, and we'll see you folks next weekend right here.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Mick, a news and public affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.